Welcome to the Nerd Party.
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Philip Gilfus.
I'm Daniel Prue.
And this is City Alpha 3.
Hello, everyone. I'm Daniel Prue, and welcome to SETI Alpha 3. Joining me today, as always, are my pilot and co-pilot, Darren Moser and Philip Gilfus. How are you doing, fellas?
Doing great.
I just wanted to be known that Philip was the pilot when we crashed, not I. That was not my day.
Look, much like many helmsmen and helmswomen, that planet came out of nowhere.
That sounds.
I was the one on the side of going, "Oh shoot!" as we crashed.
So, guys, you know this is our second episode,
which is sophomoric attempt.
It is, and a second episode of a series is called a pilot. So, we're going to be talking about pilots. That's actually not true. You know, we had our interest.
In Star Trek, it is.
In Star Trek,
it is. In Star Trek, it can be. So, yes. No. Of course, in our pilot, we talk, you know, it was an introduction kind of thing. But I thought we're close enough to the pilot of our show that we could talk about Star Trek pilots. It seemed a fitting way to start out our topics as regular. So, guys, let's talk about the pilots of Star Trek. Now, a few rules. We're gonna do this in-universe chronologically.
Yes.
Okay.
Which is probably the way I'm almost always going to approach it, canonically. So, and then of course there's the bit with TOS, but we'll get there when we get to TOS. Before we start and go down the list of pilots, I want to ask you guys, what do you think makes a good pilot? You know, we're obviously going to be talking about the quality of these different episodes, but, a pilot is given a very big job. You know, you have an hour or two, in most cases here in Star Trek, where you have to introduce a whole new crew, a whole new cast of people, you know, and you kind of set up the story. This is a big job. And it's a hard thing to do right. So what would you consider a successful pilot?
I think, and I'm thinking about 75% of Star Trek series, it sets the mission. You know, for instance, you know, when we're talking TOS and TNG, they don't, I mean, as far as what I'm about to say, they don't do that. Like, I mean, TNG's like, we're going to explore aliens. Okay, well, I've watched Star Trek, yeah. But as far as all the other series, they're like, hey, we just discovered a big wormhole, and this is going to be a whole blowing my mind of things that are possibilities, or we're stuck in the Delta Quadrant, or we're going to be the first humans ever in space. Like, okay, well, this sets the whole mission of what we're doing. And so like for TOS and TNG, maybe because just they're such unique properties, they didn't have to do that. Like TNG's like, we're doing Star Trek again. That's what we're doing. But I think you set the mission of like, yeah, you introduce the characters, of course, and backgrounds and all that. But it's sort of like, this is where we're going along, guys, and I hope you'd like to join us.
Yeah, that's true. A lot of Star Trek is defining how it's not the one with the Enterprise. Because that's kind of the base, and then you have to build yourself up from that.
That was the working title for Deep Space Nine.
Wagon train to the... Oh, wait, we can't do that.
And then they're like, they're on the next series. Like, this one has Enterprise. What should we call it? I got an idea, guys.
Enterprise. Yeah, I feel it's interesting how pilots, though, are definitely changing. I mean, back in the day, you know, a pilot was not only introducing a series, but it was pivotal for the series getting picked up, for being chosen to be made into something more than just an episode. Whereas now, I think of like the most recent thing, you know, I've kind of seen of like Stranger Things, which is, you know, science fiction, that didn't really have a pilot. It was, this is episode one. Like we're getting into an era where you get sold on the entire concept, and then you get... Your pilot is almost your first season with a smaller, usually, run of episodes. And so, yes, you're introducing the world, and those elements of the pilot still exist. But nowadays, there's less of a make it or break it on this one episode, I feel. At least how Star Trek is kind of heading. But back, you know, where, like Philip said, when the other shows were launching, it was, what is our mission? And I think that's a great aspect of Star Trek. And it's all open possibilities at that point of what can happen.
Yeah, because I mean, like, think about, like, Discovery does not have a pilot, obviously. It doesn't have anything. No, I'm kidding. But, you know, that was sort of like...
Then who's flying the ship, Phil? Oh, wait.
Well, a robot, probably.
Lots of robots. That never goes wrong. But no, I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if Discovery didn't have a pilot, per se, like how we think of it.
There's nothing. There's no one cast. I don't know anything that's going on with Discovery right now. But, yeah, yeah. Well, it's like, you know, you live near L.A. with pilot season, but those are usually
obviously
more...
I know everything about
you should
Hollywood.
But that's more like sitcoms and, you know, one camera, multi-camera, yeah, and all that stuff. But, I mean, like you said, I don't think we've had to sell Star Trek since the first one. Like, maybe, like, did TNG, like, have a pilot?
Mm-hmm.
Like, there was, like, they watched Encounter. They're like, all right, let's do that.
Yeah, that's, well, it was in syndication, right? So, I think it's slightly different. It wasn't selling the entire show. I think that's why they were able to do like the first two seasons pretty much uninhibited the way that they did them. Obviously, you know, because, you know, Love It or Leave It, it took a while to get off the ground. So I think because of the syndication thing, that was also a slightly different situation. But you're absolutely right, Darren. That's something I didn't even think about. Actually, you're not wrong, Philip, when you say Discovery doesn't have a pilot. Not in the traditional sense, anyways. It is, you know, it's just the whole series. That's it. That's what we're getting. So
I didn't mean to jump to Discovery. I know we're going, you know, chronological order, but...
Well, it'll come up right after the first one. So yeah, really, no, you're not that
it's
far
pretty
ahead.
Close. It's pretty close, yeah. So, let's just start then. Let's go to Enterprise and talk about Broken Bow.
It's been a long time.
Yeah.
Getting from there to here. And, you know, it's really got to sell it because we're not even going to put Star Trek in the title.
Yes.
So, that's right. Enterprise.
And I will tell you, spoilers for the rest of the show, this is actually my favorite of the pilots.
Oh.
It is a really good pilot.
I really liked it. Yeah.
Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah. I think part of it is the production value. I mean, it was like the first time it was all on widescreen and like it was super cool looking. You know, everything was different and new. It wasn't all L cars everywhere and you know, the same uniforms. It was also
many buttons.
it was all fresh.
You like ornery farmers. You like you like gel, slow motion on the back being rubbed.
Although
slowly.
I think the title should have been Klingon in a Cornfield rather than Broken Bow. But
yeah. Well, I mean, he was only there for so long. So, yeah, I really like Broken Bow a lot. In fact, how do you guys feel about it?
Yeah, no, I really enjoy it as a pilot. It captures the optimism because, again,
optimism.
But a pilot does have to capture the tone of this show. And like we've said already, Enterprise is all about getting out there and, you know, let's see what's out there and exploring. And, you know, it's like, oh, remember when we were explorers? Yeah, that's all we do because what's beyond our parking lot, you know. But it was a good first mission. And
you mean beyond the farthest star?
It's the second star to the right, per se. But it was good. And it set up all of our characters. Everyone had something to do. And I think and I like how, you know, like to Paul, it was kind of like, oh, this wasn't her original intent, like that she's going to be on the ship and now she is. Like that made sense. But I'm glad it wasn't like disaster strikes and everyone gets thrown together and then they're like, oh, why not just keep everyone together? Like it was a little more structured than that. But overall, it was a really good story. And I agree with you, Daniel. It's one of the better pilots.
Like I was watching it, I mean not recently, but I'll say a month or two ago with my fiance, and you know, she's still somewhat new to Star Trek. And so I think there were points in Enterprise where she was like, eh, you know, or Broken Bow, but like the stuff that I had already made fun of, like, you know, like the
super CG smile.
No, like the what am I talking about? The decon chamber.
Oh, yeah.
Like,
oh,
I see what you're doing.
Yep.
Please stop. But
like they might as well look right into the camera like, this is for the views.
Well, sex. Ba-da-bum.
You know, it's well, they did a couple things. Yeah, well, man. So, yeah, the decon chamber scene. And then, of course, like like Archer like swearing and stuff, like just like little things that they just tried to push the boundaries, which is whatever.
This
like,
isn't your daddy's Star Trek.
Yeah, that's exactly what they were trying to do, and like that makes me roll my eyes more than anything. Like you're trying too hard. You know what I'm saying? You don't have to do these things. But overall, I did like it a lot.
Well, I like Broken Bow because I think it delivers on, like, this is the promise of Enterprise. Because, like, you could argue that each pilot is a promise. Like, this is what we're going to be doing. And I think the promise of Enterprise is obviously the prequel. And so you get, you know, it's like silly stuff, but I like it. Like, people wearing hats, you know, bumping the pod against, you know, scratching the paint, you know, like the buttons, like you said.
Very real.
Yeah, meeting Hoshi and, you know, actually hearing different languages being spoken and the UT experience. And then, you know, like the wide-eyed humans first time, like the oxygen weaning scene where, you know, Tripp's like, you know, what are you doing to that child? You know, and, you know, it's all like
puts him in his place. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And you have, I think for a someone who doesn't come to Enterprise new, who's like a diehard Trekkie or even, you know, who knows their Trek, it is a lot of cool stuff. Like, oh my gosh, Vulcans for the first time, and this is the first contact prequel sequel. And, you know, this is the beginnings. And, you know, and the captain, he sort of, I don't think he's like any other captain we've met before in that pilot, because he's kind of like a little more rougher. I don't know if that's really the right word, you know, where he's like, you know, he's
less almost seasoned. Like,
yeah,
you know, that's a terrible thing to say to a man.
Yeah, but he's almost like Sisko in that he comes to the pilot with a chip on his shoulder. You know, like, you know, we're here to prove ourselves and you stupid Vulcans and blah, 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 blah. And there's a dog. I mean, so really.
There is a dog, which is the best part, for sure.
Yeah, and then, I mean, people have accents. Like, I mean, you don't generally get that in Starfleet crew. You have a guy who's from the South.
British Targ is a soaring
But when's the last time you heard like a regional accent?
I was going to say, you mean American regional accents.
Well, like even, I don't know, I guess with Bashir, but like, I don't know. You know, you don't hear like someone from the North, Northern England on Star Trek, do you? You know, I don't, you know, are there many Scots, you know, well, obviously Scotty, but like, you know, I don't think like you get a lot of regional accents.
Scott, other than I mean, like, there's Scotty, there's O'Brien.
He's Irish.
Well, I know, but I'm just saying you said from different the regions, so I was just...
Well, no, like regional accents, not like national accents.
Oh, okay, I get what you're saying, I get what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's really good to me, and, you know, one thing that I did want to bring up, because this bothers me a lot and sticks in my... This, I will probably have to have a whole topic about this. I was fine with the way that... And this is going way into the future now at this point, but you mentioned the Klingon, Darren, and I wanted to say I was totally fine with the first contact with the Klingons and all this stuff was going around and fine. And they had the ridges, and then apparently they felt the need to be trapped and try to explain away those ridges at this point. It's a whole other subject. We're not going to get into it. I just wanted to... Just what popped into my head, so...
Daniel, we do not talk about the subject of Outsiders.
So what do we think? I mean, I know I think Broken Bow... Very successful as a pilot. Gets these characters off the ground, gets them on the ship.
Get them off the ground. I see what you did there.
everybody else agree? We like Broken Bow. I think it's a good pilot.
Yes.
And so here's a question, because we always want to throw some speculation in all of this. You know, each of these pilots, well, except for the in the beginning, in real life, are 2 hours. Discovery is not going to be on television. It's going to be on, you know...
But it is. Access. The pilot is going to be on television.
Well, that's true. Well, is it going to be? Do we know? Is it going to be a 2 hour?
No, I
we don't.
Doubt it.
But I would. But I would assume it would be.
Really, see, I would not expect that. I wouldn't expect it because I mean, like, if you watch Netflix, like you mentioned Stranger Things, their first episode is just a first episode. Like you said, it's not a double episode.
But I could see them saying, "Here's a double dose of length of this new show. Now come over to our subscription service."
Yeah,
I mean,
no,
that's basically what the
it'd
pilot
be like a
is doing.
Part one, part two, when they, you know, whatever. But like,
oh, that would be tricky.
One of the pilots is aired, and then part two of the pilots on the subscription service.
That's CBS. Wow. If you're listening, that's how you get them.
That's how you get them.
Jeez.
Well, because like I think my favorite and
subscription service is good for business. It's the 56th rule of acquisition.
You know, because I think of Battlestar Galactica. Like to me, doing the miniseries pilot, right, quote unquote, It's like, no, this is just a mini series. Wink. You know, and then
we weren't planning anything after this.
Like, yeah, I think that's sort of the bait and hook. But anyway,
It'd be interesting to see what they do.
No, I agree, because as someone, you know, Enterprise is not necessarily my favorite, but I do, there are good things I like about it. I think Broken Bow promised a lot of things that were like, yeah, I want to see where this thing goes. You know, I had some prejudice going into Enterprise, you know, watching it. I'm like, oh, there's no such thing as a bird of prey during this time, or, oh, I've never heard of the Sewell about, you know, but all that stuff. I was like, yeah, you know what? I'll forgive it. Let's go. Some cool stuff going on. Let's make this happen.
All right, so moving on in the timeline, we get to TOS. Now, Where No Man Has Gone Before, that was the pilot. Listen.
Well, a pilot.
A.K.A. first episode.
Well, it wasn't the first pilot.
Here's the thing. The Cage is a pilot to a different show.
Right.
I know it gets retconned later on into the show. Kind of sloppily, I will say.
I mean, 90% of the crew is not in the rest of the show.
But, I mean, The Cage was, like, literally, it was, they said, no, we can't do this. We have to rewrite it and different characters. It's fine. I'm not hating on The Cage at all. The Cage is a really good episode. Really interesting episode, I'll say, for sure. But it's just different. I mean, it's just
things
different.
Are not always so black and white.
Yeah. It is literally not the pilot for the original series, though. It's not the pilot for Star Trek. So we're going to go with Where No Man Has Gone Before. Now, we can talk about The Cage. That's fine. I have no problems with that. But we're gonna focus on Where No Man Has Gone Before.
Why are they wearing brown uniforms?
Why? I don't know. It was so... Blah. Yeah. It's a good episode, though. Again, because TV was so different in the 60s, it's a little different than how we would consider a pilot now. You know, it's not... It does, I guess, establishes the world and stuff, but it's not... It doesn't set up a lot other than the environment, you know, the universe. But you know what I'm saying? It doesn't, like Philip was mentioning, it doesn't set up an ongoing storyline or anything like that. We just get this adventure in space. But
I mean, that's what they're selling. They're selling adventure in space.
Yep, that's true. So how does it work for you guys?
It's, I mean, like you said, it's a good intro story. I think the whole kind of super powered human is an interesting take. And the fact that they have to kind of take, you know, drastic measures right off the bat, you know, like planning to maroon them on the planet, and you get the awesome phaser rifle, and you know, it's, but again, even this I don't feel is like a pilot in the sense of, it feels much more like this is episode one of what you're gonna get, and less like this needs to sell something. But that's just how it kind of feels to me.
Well, like, in what, you know, not that they played this hard, and I think you also have to do, you know, some research to think about this, but like, you know, Gary Mitchell is supposed to be like Jim Kirk's best friend, like on the ship. And like, I've heard like he's actually supposed to be the first officer, but you know, you kind of have to like read it between the lines, whether that's true or not. But, you know, it kind of reminds me of, for those who've ever watched Torchwood, and I'm sure someone else can think of other examples, where you kill off a main character in the pilot. Like, not that Gary Mitchell's a main character, but like, oh, hey, this is like, he's the helmsman, or, you know, whatever. And like, boom, dead. All right, that's what's happened on this show, folks. Who's going to happen next? You know, like,
well,
that
Voyager
modern...
does that to half the crew.
That's true.
The original Doctor of Voyager.
First officer.
The helmsman. Yeah. Not the helmsman, I guess, but.
No, it was the helmsman.
Was the helmsman there too? Yeah.
Betazoid. The very sensuous helmsman. I think Where No Man Has Gone Before. Because as far as like a sci-fi story, I think it has, you know, chops. Like, you know, we're going to the edge of the galaxy. We encounter these weird things. They occupy humans, and what effect does it have on us? And then how far will you go to your friend? You know, and what does someone have to do to endanger themselves? And would you kill your friend? Like, this is like weird sci-fi, you know, story things that are very, interesting, and I think, yeah, it's like you said, doesn't necessarily introduce the characters. We don't learn all about Spock and Sulu. Of course, you know, some would argue it takes like a whole season for us to learn about these characters. Like, is Uhura even in the pilot? Like, McCoy's not even in Where No Man Has Gone Before. I think it establishes, hey, this is going to be a pretty cool show.
Yeah, it definitely sets the tone for sure. There's no doubt about it. It sets the tone for what TOS is. It's very hard. It's very hardcore TOS-y, and it's cool. I like it for that reason. Looking at it as a quote unquote pilot, it's kind of putting a different era's term, you know, like not term because they had pilots back then, but like an idea that we have a slightly different idea of what a pilot should be now than it was in 1966. But, you know, it still works for me. It still works. It does. You know, it's fun. It's going back and watching it. The things that stick out to me are the things that don't make sense, that actually don't fit within the rest of TOS, the uniforms and some of the props and stuff, and some of the things that they tweaked a little bit afterwards.
Middle initials.
middle initials, perhaps, yeah. So some of that stuff is actually kind of fun to see how they kind of refined as they went along. But I don't ever like look at it and be like, oh, look what they got wrong. You know, it's like, no, it was the first time they were doing it. So, you know, give them a pass.
Also, we're so spoiled, but like, and I'm not a expert on 60s, you know, TV / sci-fi, but like, the actual show, like, this starship looks pretty cool. Like, this isn't just, you know, bleep, blop, lorp, you know, Danger Will Robinson. Like, okay, this, people are like, it's kind of a military or uniform, space uniform, galaxy fleet. And, like, people act like they know what they're doing and things mean things. And there's some science going down with transporters and everything. Like, okay, this is interesting stuff. Like, it seems like it's taking things seriously here. It's not just throwing some, you know, sets up and going crazy.
Yeah. So that was TOS. Again, the Cage is a pilot for Star Trek, but it's a pilot for a different version of Star Trek. So with different main character and different side characters, it's hard to really kind of, you know, as a pilot, it works. But we don't know what that show would have been, you know, if it continued.
So, like, I know there's a comic series in IDW, I think I know that. But, like, has anyone ever tried to do the fan film of that series?
That'd be interesting.
Like episode 2
has more of a 50s Forbidden Planet kind of feel.
Mm-hmm.
So like episode 2, you're saying like somebody tried to like come up with what that would
or
be
a
like?
Phase 2?
Like you would call it Star Trek Continues First.
That's not confusing at all.
Phase 1 then.
No. That's a good idea actually to talk about what would that show be like? And how different would it be, you know?
Yeah, because there's nothing, I mean, you know, you'd have, like, you have your standard TOS fan film set. I think that's the standard. Like, you just order that out of the catalog. But anyway, you have your standard, like, it's the Enterprise, right? You can play with it a little bit because things look different. And then you don't, uniforms are just brown, so you don't have to spend a lot of money on uniforms, right? And then, like, you know, the characters are so ill-defined, you can do whatever you want with them.
Interesting. I never would have thought about that, but it's actually a kind of a cool concept. But that's TOS. So that is, we've done Enterprise and TOS. Let's move on. So let's talk about a little show.
You may have heard of it.
Let's talk about the animated series, Darren. So what do you think about that pilot? I have to admit, full disclosure, still haven't watched. I've seen 2 or 3 episodes of the animated series. I haven't watched the pilot. Darren, can you tell us a little bit about the pilot? Or do we
Journey
just want
to
skip
to the farthest star, isn't it?
Yeah, well, with Star Trek, the animated series, I mean, yeah, it's beyond the farthest star.
Oh, beyond
while
the farthest
exploring,
star.
While exploring on the outermost rim of the galaxy, the USS Enterprise is pulled into the orbit of a dead star. Trapped there, the crew discovers that an ancient derelict pod ship trapped with them as well. Yeah, it's, I mean, again, you also have to remember, though, that Star Trek, the animated series, was Star Trek. Like, it was just animated. So it was like, this is a continuation of the journey. It wasn't meant to be like, let's jump a million years in the future or let's change things up. It was supposed to be as similar to TOS, just had a little A in there, you know, for the animated. So, I mean, you could call it a pilot, but I don't feel that this one was written to pitch this show. It was just the next episode. It just didn't have live people in it.
Season 4. And I think
basically season 4, yes.
Like I think I had not until, you know, last year, I guess, right? I hadn't really committed to watching the animated series because I, you know, had that sort of prejudice that a lot of people have about TAS. You know, I think I'd always seen this episode a lot because I'm like, oh, I'm going to start it. And I watched it and be like, okay, I'll start playing it again later. And then would never do it. And like, okay, no, I'm going to start it this time. Let me watch it again. And so I think that first episode, now I am enjoying the animated series, so I'm going to throw that out there first. I think that first episode is very stilted, which you would say, well, isn't that all of animation in Star Trek? Yes, but I think it's to me, it's I don't know whether it's the voice acting or the animation, but it's kind of very stilted to me. But I think it's an interesting story because it does show, hey, in the animated series, we can do a whole bunch of crazy things. Like we can do a ship that looks like this big pod thing that we could never do
right.
on
That's
live
the big difference. Like, look
60s.
At this budget, quote unquote, to draw something that would have just broken the bank to do in live action.
Right. We introduce life belts. I mean, come on. You know, that's just...
Which still looked better than TOS spacesuits, I'm just saying.
but I you know, if you are open to the animated series, I think the first episode is just that, like Darren said. It's just the first episode. And I know Yesteryear, blah, blah, blah. I'm not saying that's bad, but I just know everyone. You either know Yesteryear or then you don't know anything about the animated series. But I have enjoyed everything else other than Magic, because that's a weird episode. But like I've enjoyed where I am right now in the animated series. I would say first episode, if you like it or don't like it, keep going, ignore it. You know, just put in 3 episodes of the animated series. If you're not sold, then you can stop. If you are sold,
keep
going.
That's true. The shorter running times, it runs very fast. And it's only 22 episodes, so you can get through it very quickly.
So yeah, I don't think it necessarily promises anything other than like, this is what our animation is going to be like, guys. So yeah.
That is TAS. Let's talk TNG, guys. Something that I think we've done once or twice before.
Not familiar.
Maybe
with
twice.
This.
Encounter at Farpoint Station, guys.
The great 2-hour that was originally meant to be 1 hour that was shoehorned into 2 hours.
But hey, you know what? We have to thank it for that because. That's what the Q, where the Q stuff came from. It was just going to be. It was going to be
Q.
It was just going to be a
letter of the alphabet,
Space Jellyfish Station until they had to make it a double episode. So they were. I think there was like a 20-minute segment where they were just talking about apples. So I just
wasn't Encounter at Farpoint. It was Joy and Gratitude Hour.
Well, it's literally called Encounter at Farpoint. If it was called Encounter at FarQ point, then I think it would have promised a whole lot more.
What a stupid
encounter
name.
Spelled with a Q.
Well, I was going to say, I mean, this is the first Star Trek pilot that goes like, hey, would you like to meet some characters? Okay, yeah. Captain Picard, you got your 5 minutes. Okay. Riker, you got your 5 minutes. Okay. Crusher and Crusher, all right, and you talk to the audience. You know, this is like literally we need to meet character by character by character. I mean, I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but it's just like it's very obvious what we're doing here.
Grappler Zorn, up your turn. Okay.
He'll be very important later on.
Very important. You know?
It's not a great episode. It's very awkward. The pace is very off again because it was one episode stretched to fill two. When you go back and watch it, it feels weird. The story isn't bad per se, but it just doesn't feel like it has clear direction.
I think the part where you're in the middle of a bridge crisis, Picard's like, certain death. Wait, guys, I need to go talk to Beverly. I'll be back. Be back.
My favorite part of Encounter at Farpoint is the 1/3 that it makes up of All Good Things.
Yes, I agree.
Is actually way better. And then, like, revisiting it, you get all nostalgic. You're like, oh, it's like they're in the first season uniforms, and oh, they don't know what Q is, and you're like, oh, it's like you just focus, hyper-focus on the good parts, and you just leave everything else
out. But Data's rank is wrong. Everything's, my world's blown. Anyway.
It's funny, too. The one thing that really sticks out to me, of all the inconsistencies with Farpoint, with everything else, is Picard's irrational anger at the red alert noise. What's that? Shut off that damn noise. It's
like, what did you expect?
You've been captain of a starship for 20 years. Why are you getting so
angry? The Stargazer red alert was so underpowered. It was going to fall off at any moment.
He's used to it being like, alert, condition red, alert, condition red. This none of this klaxon business.
See, Picard was used to the read alert back on these old ships. They switched to that.
A British man did invent the read alert.
That's right. That's true.
Actually, I guess it would have to be a French
Picard wasn't
joke.
British, so I don't know.
Well, you know, this is, we kind of skipped over to an Enterprise, I guess, but at least in real chronology, this is every, from now on, every Star Trek pilot will have the handoff.
Yeah. It's true.
In Enterprise, we didn't talk about it, had Zefram Cochran from First Contact. So that was sort of the handoff, even though I guess that's weird because it didn't go from like Voyager to Enterprise. But anyway, it was at least a have someone from before. So this one, of course, we have Admiral McCoy, you know, handing off the show, TOS handing off to TNG. So you had that, which actually I think it's a little...
And then yet again in the first movie, several years later, would do it again.
Yeah, and I mean, it's kind of racist. But I think it's a cute scene with McCoy and Data and you know, a little handoff.
Oh, yeah. So, it's a great scene.
Yeah. I think this would make a tight hour and a half. So, like, if someone would want to do the super cut of Encounter at Farpoint, like, that's an hour and a half instead of 2 hours. Actually, I guess with commercials.
We know what you want, cut.
Hour and 20. Yeah, I am not kidding. You keep that saucer separation sequence. I don't care. That is my motion picture.
Of the whole thing.
Ship porn. I want to keep the...
I extend that scene somehow. Find more shots.
I don't know about that, but...
I want motion picture level of flying around the ship when it's separated.
There is a lot of good stuff there. It does set the tone a lot. I mean, the entire court... scene with Q and Picard and
ring the bell.
That is the foundation of all good things as well. You know, I mean, that they pick that ball up and continue with it. And, you know, watching that episode, you would never think they would do that because it's good Star Trek talk. The concepts that they're talking about are big and important and they matter. So it's good for that, but it's just like you would never, I never expected them to go that way. I guess it makes a lot of sense. But again, we're gonna rank these later on.
Oh, okay.
Okay, yeah, is this so. Like a ensign or a lieutenant commander?
No, not like rank them, but like rank them in order. Well, this is not, I don't think, near the top.
They can't self-promote. It's chosen by the bad rules.
Like petty officer? What is, I don't know.
Good stuff in it, but... not the strongest way to start it.
Yeah. Well, because I don't, other than the promise of doing Star Trek again, there's no real, like, hey, we have a bunch of characters.
And the nostalgia
Star Trek.
Factor of being your favorite series, like,
yeah.
On its own, it doesn't stand up as well.
Well, I also think there's some timeliness. Like you said, Broken Bow you like because of the production value, which I think is correct. Like, can you watch these pilots and be like, oh, yeah, or you're like, man, TV was different back then. Like, I think you watch Encounter at Farpoint, you're like, man, TV was different back then, you know, because you have the music, which I like, but I'm biased because I like TNG, so I would probably like most things. But like, it's very blaring, like, der, 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 like they're just sitting there. You don't have to, you know, and then the lighting is really poor.
They're just staring
honestly.
At the screen that hasn't been filled in yet.
That's right. Maybe I just need the Blu-ray polished one, but anyway.
So that is TNG. Guys, let's move on to Deep Space Nine and talk about Emissary. What do we think about Emissary?
We just can't leave it.
Emissary, by the way, you know, Philip just mentioned handoffs, and there's like a zillion handoffs from TNG into Deep Space Nine.
We literally hand them off
a character. Best of both worlds part three, basically. Yeah.
And that's like the opening scene, but of course O'Brien, there's like, the Enterprise is literally there. I mean, this is like, this isn't a handoff. This is more of like a wheelbarrow off, like of just stuff. From TNG.
Like they literally give them a ship from the Enterprise. Like, here's some runabouts.
Here's some runabouts. But that's really, that's like a tiny part of this episode. Really, as much as we love all that stuff, it's not even 5% of Emissary. So let's talk about Emissary on its own terms. Emissary, I think, works really well. Really, really well. Establishing this setting, this new setting, brand new to Star Trek. Not that they didn't have space stations, but I mean, for a show, and these new characters and all this new stuff. And I think they mostly knock it out of the park.
Well, I think it definitely, and knowing for those who don't know, I'm not the most biggest DS9 fan, but I think it definitely expands the universe, both that we know and don't know. Like we know theoretically what a Bajoran is. We know what a Ferengi is. Correct, but like we meet them in sort of different ways, like, okay, we have a Bajoran first officer. Well, that's interesting. Okay. And she sort of, you know, talks about the things, and she has this certain personality, and we have a Ferengi bartender, and then we have a changeling. We've never seen a changeling before. That's interesting. And Bajorans have their own uniforms, they have their own militia, they have their own planet, you know, all this stuff. Like, okay, well, this is interesting. And there's new uniforms. Okay. This is a crazy, craziness stuff. But also, like, you see all these different aliens. It's sort of, and I know this isn't an original comment, but it's sort of like the Mos Eisley of Star Trek, where we've never seen this corner before of Star Trek, even though we kind of maybe knew it was there. And so you're kind of opening it up and like, well, this is going to be different. You know, it's not just like, and I'm not saying they did this, but it's not like the Next Generation, like, hey, we're doing Star Trek again. Deep Space Nine is like, we're doing Star Trek different. Like, we're showing another part of it. And you're like, well, this is interesting. And not only that, we're going to open it up to a whole other side of the galaxy with a wormhole. Okay. That's, and it's not set on a starship. That's not even Starfleet. And so it's like promises, like all this completely different stuff. And when I remember when I was doing my rewatch, and this is going to sound like a backhanded compliment, which it probably is, I remember looking at it going like, this station is trash. This is like Battlestar Galactica. Like, and I know I keep talking, like, take a drink every time now. Like, is this just going to be, I knew the answer was no, having seen the series several times, but like, is this going to be like, the place is going to be trash and we're just going to see it get better and better? Like every episode was like, no, episode 2, everything's fixed and done. But like, that was sort of like the cool, like, oh, this is going to be cool. You get to see like the station get rebuilt and all these things, you know, just like Bajor's getting rebuilt and this new and everything, you're starting from scratch and Bashir's really annoying. But other than that, like, it definitely had a lot of things like, yeah, I want to see where these things are going.
Yeah, really, I like how it focuses on Sisko and the emissary and all of that, like, because that becomes such an important thread for the entire series. I feel it focuses much more on a single character or a pilot than the, I mean, yes, you establish the ensemble, you establish the scene and all the sub characters, but I think it is smart in the fact that, well, our episode has to be about someone though. It can't just be about everybody at the same time. So by grounding it in Sisko and his beef with Picard and his transition into this new role as commander of the station and emissary makes it a strong episode in that regard. That will pay off throughout the 7 years.
I mean, I think in some ways, this may be too analytical, that they sort of handicapped Sisko a lot. Okay, hey, he's not a captain. He's just a commander. He doesn't even want to be there. It's clerks in space. He's not even supposed to be here today. And he has a chip on his shoulder about everything. Though he kind of like goes two ways. Like, he'll have a chip on the shoulder in private with Picard. But then when he meets Kira, he's like, you know, hey, boom, I can knock this down too. You're right. We need to get things done. Like, so he's sort of like, he's professional, but he's also troubled. And he has his son with him who he's trying to, you know, so they're sort of, you had the anti-family captain with a TNG pilot. You have the pro-family, commander in the DS9 pilot. And so like, in some ways, like, well, am I going to like this commander who doesn't want to be in Star Trek? Cause I want to be in Star Trek. Why doesn't he want to be in Star Trek? But like you said, you go through that journey in Emissary that sort of like, okay, hey, there's promise. Things are going to get better and it see what happens in this thing that's going to make your life better.
Yeah. To me, it tells a story. It tells a complete story. You know, I mean, I guess so far, you know, Broken Bow left set up a lot. Where No Man Has Gone Before does tell a very discreet story, but doesn't really set anything up for the future. Emissary sets a ton up for the future and also tells its own story. Like, it's like, this is the origin story of this thing. So as a pilot, I think it works tremendously well on that level because you are both setting up this universe and also telling it's a lot of moving parts, and I think it could have fallen apart very quickly. And it's kind of amazing to me that it actually falls in place so well. The biggest problem I have with it is could they have, could they have been orbiting a more boring planet? But that's just my personal bias, so I'm not going to get into that.
They stopped orbiting the planet, Daniel. They did. They solved your problem right in the pilot. They're going away from the planet.
It was so boring, they just left. I kid. Yeah.
And we're never able to do that again. Really, I feel like in some episodes we could have. Nope. Was the only time. Nope.
We can't go back. We cannot go back. Maybe they feel the same way about Bajor that I do. I don't know. but yeah, Emissary is good. It's good stuff. And Emissary also, you know, sets up a lot of stuff that is obviously picked up in a slightly different way than TNG, but is sets up a lot that's picked up in the series finale as well.
Yeah, and maybe like what you said, where it promised a lot. You know, with the other shows, they're in a, obviously they're in a starship, so like, well, they can go to different places. So you know what? If this story doesn't catch you, there'll be another one next week that'll be completely different. Deep Space Nine, they're not going anywhere except for they did in the first episode, but other than there's a big wormhole too. But like that, we're here. That's where we're gonna be, folks. And so they have to be like, there's a lot to do. It'd be hard to get bored on this station, you know. But you know,
yeah. So. Well,
well, you know, we just want to take Earth with us. Just pop it in the holodeck program and just bring it along with us. We'll bring the pond.
Holosuite. It's completely different.
So since we're already on Deep Space Nine, let's embark on a journey from here to the Delta Quadrant. So let's talk Voyager, guys.
I mean, this is a really simple mission, guys. Just to the Badlands and back. I mean, what could happen?
That's like going to... Oh, shoot. Where are they going in Generations?
Neptune and back. Yeah. No, 6 minutes.
Oh, no, not Neptune. The one in Generations. Where were they going?
Yeah. They were going, like, Jupiter?
Jupiter, maybe? Back? I can't remember.
I think. Just a quick run around the solar system.
Anyways, doesn't matter. We're talking
Voyager. Pluto a planet in the 22nd century? I gotta know.
You can still travel there, whether it is or not.
No, I think, and I'm going to, I'll say this, my favorite pilot.
Oh, interesting.
Caretaker.
Interesting. Okay. So we start, right? It starts with...
Well, it starts with... Doom-doom.
Yep.
Doom-doom. In a galaxy far, far... Oh, no, wait, that's not it. But it's scrolling text. We don't get scrolling text before.
How do you feel about it, Darren?
Caretaker, I feel does a good job of setting everything up. I think it's... hard because I look back at a lot of the promise and I keep thinking of like Year of Hell, where I would have loved for Voyager to not reset every week. I think if that one small change to their overall feel would have really put it into line where we have television nowadays. Now I know, you know, that's not what happened and I'm not faulting it for that, but
Battlestar Galactica.
But the way it was set up had such promise for the struggle, you know, and I think we got compared to another series like Stargate Universe, where they're super depleted on resources and air and water, and they don't have a lot of control of their ship. I think SGU went a little on the extreme, but Voyager definitely had a very interesting premise, and I really applaud it for being a ship that's not the Enterprise, but not just. I mean, it is doing what Star Trek The Next Generation does, but it had such a unique twist on it that it worked. Because honestly, I don't know how you would pitch, okay, let's do another Star Trek show that's not on a station, that's on a ship with a different crew. How do you make it different? And they found a way. Life finds a way. Oh, sorry, wrong franchise.
Trek finds a way.
Yeah,
because I think, you know, the idea of using the McKee is would not have been probably my thought, but it's an interesting premise. You know, we're not only is it going to be a Starfleet crew on the ship, it's going to be like a pirate crew, which sounds like...
Well, not really, but...
Well, yeah, I'm saying that's what was the... You know, look, we're talking about the pilot. We're just talking about
the
pilot.
Okay, that is
look,
true.
Philip,
that
there's the Starfleet way, and there's the McKee way.
52 torpedoes and no way to replace them.
That's right.
Thank you, pilot writers, for putting in that line. We really appreciate it.
But then there's a secret tractor beam that takes away the drive that will be conspiracy mentioned later. But anyway, I mean, I just think that there's so cool things like you get to see prison in the Federation. That's cool. I mean, it's almost it's completely
a pretty
different.
Nice prison. Yeah. Just gonna say. Yeah.
Well, it's a Federation prison. We're all Swedes and Norwegians in the future. And you know, kind of reminds me. Obviously, it's completely different. But like in Enterprise, where he goes fetches Hoshi. Here you have her fetching Paris. You know,
it's good to see ankle bracelet technology is really improved by the 23rd century.
Was it New Zealand? That's a you know, if you could pick a place, I mean, yeah. You know, Lord of the Rings, obviously.
But
throw it in the fire, Mr. Paris.
But you get that
I don't know
sort of
really
like,
where I was going with that, but bring us back, Phil.
Well, you get that sort of, I mean, I don't want to oversell it, but you sort of get that epic captain intro, right? Because it's like you focus on Paris, like, you know, he's going to basically kind of be your main character for this pilot. Because you talked about, like, with Emissary, Sisko. I'm not going to say Paris carries the whole pilot, but, like, he's sort of the focus. You kind of see him in a lot of Caretaker through his eyes. And so he gets to see this epic, you know, I'm Captain Janeway, you know, in the sort of all that beginning. And then you get to the Maquis, you get them, you get to meet all the officers on Voyager, like I talked before, and you kill them all in the next 20 minutes. You care about the Betazoid helmsman, the doctor and the first officer seem a little bit like dicks, but whatever, you know, okay, we're going to meet them. But again, you're meeting Paris. He through Ensign Kim, you're meeting Paris, Paris is meeting Kim. He's meeting these people. And then, you know, you're meeting the ship. As, you know, they meet the captain, all these different stations, you get the whole spiel about, this is the Voyager, and we have organic, and, you know, da-da-da-da-da. And you go, I'm going to go through the whole pilot.
Is bioneurocircuitry really worth it in the end? Because, you know...
It's an experiment.
It had some issues.
Right. But like, the whole, you know, and then the two crews combining, and that was a really big Maquis ship. I just want to throw that out there. But anyway... But
it's only as big as the Arrow Wing. Oh, sorry. That shall not be named.
But there's a lot of promise of, like, wow, this is like two radical crews who don't mesh, have to go home. I mean, this is going to be an interesting series. I mean, you have a half-human Klingon pirate, Vulcan security officer. Well, that's different. Never seen that. You have these weird aliens, Talaxian and Kesses, because that's what they're called.
Kesses.
Ocampen. Jeez.
I can only see Kess, and everyone knows that. So, yeah, I mean, that's sort of the promise, and you go from there.
Yep. If we are talking just specifically the pilot, it does set up a lot of promise. And if you can remove yourself from, you know, maybe... I don't want to say disappointment, but the fact that maybe it doesn't necessarily deliver on that promise. If you're just talking about the pilot, it does set up a lot there. I like Caretaker. I don't really have any major problems with it. Other than the whole water thing, I always thought that was kind of strange. I mean, if you have space travel that you can't somehow find water or... Wasn't that...
Yeah, well, they don't have replicator technology.
Well, I get that, but I mean, you can go anywhere... You could probably find water.
Look, Daniel, space is big. I mean, really big. I mean, you may think it's a long way to the chemist shop, but...
You'd be surprised how astronomically, mind-bogglingly huge.
Anyways,
it is.
My point is that the Kazon they fall flat right from the beginning.
Well, like, and I think, and this isn't the Voyager podcast, because there's one that does that. But, like, I think one of the problems with Voyager is that it wasn't like small ship against the Delta Quadrant. It was like small ship that can do anything and can meet anyone and can destroy the Borg. I'm like, the Kazon should be a threat because the Voyager is a science. Well, it's not a science ship, but it's a mission specialty
science
ship.
Battleship.
Yeah, but it's very small. But I mean, you know, so the Kazon can be a threat. Like, they may not be the most exciting. I mean, I'll grant you that. But, like, as far as technology, like, oh, these are just a bunch of, you know, I'm trying to think what the word used in Nemesis, a bunch of thugs with warp drive. Or no, that was Insurrection. Like, well, that's what the Romulans were. But anyway, I just think that it was, yeah, a lot of promise, and you're like, I'm going to watch this.
Well, Philip, since you just told us what your number one is, why don't you finish out your list and tell us number one through five or six, whatever you have. Where do you land on the pilots?
I mean, I would Caretaker one. You know, it's always hard to take away your series feelings from your pilot feelings, but I'll try here. I would say Caretaker, then Broken Bow. Oh God, it's really hard. I don't know. It's really, I would say, everyone else ties at the end, I would say, after that. Because it'd be hard for me to be like...
What a cheat.
I'm not a big DS9 fan, but Emissary did have a lot. But I love TNG a lot. And then, you know, and so... And then TOS is TOS, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I'd say TIS would be ranked last. Not because I hate TIS, but I just think, yeah, it's just a regular ship episode. It's, you know, whatever. As far as pilots, it doesn't really do much. It's just like, hey, here's the show. That would be my ranking.
Darren, do you have a full list, or are you going to cheat like
hey, I Kobayashi Maru'd that. Let me eat this apple.
Well, since he went first, it did have the novelty of never being tried, but unfortunately, I can't use that. Yeah, I would say that I have to give probably Broken Bow number one. And then this is just, again, like not like what series I like the best, but what pilot I think was the best as the merits of a pilot.
Sulu.
And I think, yeah, so Broken Bow is number one. I would say number two would actually, I think, would be Emissary. Emissary is pretty dang world-buildingly big. Three, I would give to Next Gen, because, you know, Next Gen. Four, I would probably do Caretaker, and then, you know, again, just like Philip said, I don't really per se count the you know, the TOS and TS, like, those aren't pilots. I mean, they are, but not in the way that we're used to them, like the 2-hour spectacle. So I'd say I'd combine TOS and TAS at the end there.
You know, our lists are very similar. I would say certainly Broken Bow first, and then Emissary, and I'd probably tie Farpoint and Caretaker. Yeah, and then TOS after that. So
hey, does Broken Bow have banjo players? I don't think so.
Probably dun, not. But okay, guys, last
banjo Klingon players.
Oh, that would have been interesting. But the last point here, looking towards the future, let's talk, what do we want out of Discovery? Like, we've already talked a little bit about how the Discovery pilot isn't really going to be a pilot. It's just going to be this first episode in this adventure. And we don't really even know what this adventure is so far. So we can be as vague as we want.
It's an adventure of Discovery.
It very well could be an adventure of Discovery.
They're going to discover something.
So what do you think? Let's just assume that Discovery was not just chosen randomly, but it was chosen for a reason, so that they will discover something of importance. What do you think?
Probably
that could
something
be
inside themselves that was there the whole time.
Come on. But really, though, like, I mean, it's man.
Okay. Well, I mean, let's talk. Of course, I feel like by the time people listen to it, more news may have come out and we'll look stupid. But like, so we know 10 years before Kirk's TOS 5-year mission. Right. So Pike's time, kind of. Let's throw that out there. So during the cage, possibly. But other than that, and lots of robots, like more robots than you would think necessary are going to be in the show.
And we know number one, right? Number one is
A number one
is going to be okay.
Yeah.
Man,
stay number one.
I just feel like they've just tied their hands. But look, I'm not a writer, so I'm more than willing to go along with what they do here. But just
and aliens, like, think about them in TOS, and then think about it a little bit differently. That's what we're gonna do in Discovery.
But anyways, anything specific you guys are looking forward to, or anything you want to see? Would you like to see more of a bridge between would you like to see some kind of like how Beyond referenced?
I'd like to see more of the ship.
Like, I agree.
Not just the not just the rec room and the quarters and the bridge and the engineering. Like, come on, guys! Like,
what does the ship have that makes
make
it
this feel like a big ship? Make us feel make us fall in love with this ship as we do all these others.
And I would think, or would hope, that in this 21st century age of television, that the Ark is going to be introduced. Because it's only going to be a few episodes, right, in season one. Am I making up 13? Have we heard the number yet?
Yeah, I don't remember specifically
but anyway,
the number.
But, you know, it's not going to be 20. So that there is going to be, you know, each they're promising each episode's a chapter, whatever that means. And so, but that, you know,
Philip's never read a book before.
I've never read a TV book before. Okay. It's like Nook is about as much as I've gotten away from.
You've
the
never
paper
read Ship
version
of the Line? Oh, sorry. I shouldn't do that.
And so, but obviously you have, you know, you introduce like every other, how you tell a story. But, you know, it's going to be like the great mystery, like Future Guy, but better, obviously. You know, what is Discovery going to do? What's its mission? What's the promise of Discovery in this? I know it's not TOS, but kind of is. In this TOS world, what more are you going to show us that we don't already know? Like, I don't mean to say that like a chip on my shoulder, but like, you know, I'm generally familiar with this universe, you know, but you're going to show me something new, obviously, and I'm looking forward to it. But what's that promise?
It should feel like something where I should hopefully feel like, oh man, I've always kind of wondered about X. You know, I'm hoping to have something like that.
Now, is that related to Q, X, or is that...
So would you say you're hoping to maybe discover a little bit more about Star Trek?
Hey-o. Now,
I just feel like they were doing Explore, and then like someone busted out the source. Like, I want to call it Exploration, but maybe we do a Discovery. Got it. So it's like, to discover strange new worlds. See what we did there?
Yeah, I want to be careful not to focus too much on Discovery, because, again, being a podcast, you're kind of... You're not bound by regular time. You know, people might discover this 6 months from now and when the show's already out, and it might not matter. But I just want
to... Back in our day, when we didn't know what was going to happen.
Are we covered in bright light? What is linear time?
Well, listen, it's a lot like baseball. Bringing it back to pilots. Look at that. Anyways.
So are you on a quest for epic gear, housewares, or collectibles? Loot Crate offers an epic range of pop culture items for less than $20 a month. And every month, there's Loot Crate Wear, our monthly wearable and accessory subscription to fill your closet with cult classics and your favorite franchise. And if you want to get fancy, there's also the bigger box with even bigger loot with Loot Crate DX. Now ready your wands, pre-measure your potions, and get ready for November's enchanting theme, Magical. They have powerful ancient spells delivered to you with this 100% exclusive crate featuring bewitching items from Doctor Strange, Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, and Big Trouble in Little China. You have until the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe and receive this month's Loot Crate. And when that cutoff happens, it's all over. Make sure to head to lootcrate.com/nerdparty and enter code nerdparty to save on any new subscription today.
All right, and then please listen to all the other great shows here on the Nerd Party Network. And if you want to hear about one of those other star franchises with droids, there is Aggressive Negotiations and Great Shot, Kid. You can also try Filibuster and Nerd Nuptial and our other new shows, Missing Frames and Punch It. I mean, there's so much listening to on the Nerd Party Network coming to you every day of the week. So visit again, thenerdparty.com today and subscribe.
Philip, what are we talking about next week?
Well, you know, Brian Fuller has promised that there are going to be robots in Discovery. Well, I don't think I have to tell you, we've already had robots in Star Trek. And so next week, we're going to be talking about Here Comes the Droids, Robots in Star Trek.
Contractually can't call them that.
These aren't the droids you're looking for.
I'm Darren Moser.
I'm Daniel Prue.
I'm Philip Gilfus, stranded here on SETI Alpha 3.